man is bad by virtue of pursuing the excess, not by virtue of pursuing the necessary pleasures. For all men enjoy in some way or other both dainty foods and wines and sexual intercourse. But not all men do so as they ought. The contrary is the case with pain. For he does not avoid the excess of it, he avoids it altogether, and this is peculiar to him, for the alternative to excess of pleasure is not pain, except to the man who pursues this excess. Since we should state not only the truth, but also the cause of error, for this contributes towards producing conviction, since when a reasonable explanation is given of why the false view appears true, this tends to produce belief in the true view. Therefore we must state why the bodily pleasures appear the more worthy of choice. A. Firstly, then, it is because they expel pain. Owing to the excesses of pain that men experience, they pursue excessive and in general bodily pleasure as being a cure for the pain. Now curative agencies produce intense feeling, which is the reason why they are pursued, because they show up against the contrary pain. Indeed, pleasure is thought not to be good for these two reasons, as has been said, viz. That A. Some of them are activities belonging to a bad nature, either congenital, as in the case of a brute, or due to habit, i.e. those of bad men, while B. Others are meant to cure a defective nature, and it is better to be in a healthy state than to be getting into it. But these arise during the process of being made perfect, and are therefore only incidentally good. B. Further, they are pursued because of their violence by those who cannot enjoy other pleasures. At all events, they go out of their way to manufacture thirsts somehow for themselves. When these are harmless, the practice is irreproachable. When they are hurtful, it is bad. For they have nothing else to enjoy, and besides, a neutral state is painful to many people because of their nature. For the animal nature is always in travail, as the students of natural science also testify, saying that sight and hearing are painful. But we have become used to this, as they maintain. Similarly, while in youth, people are, owing to the growth that is going on, in a situation like that of drunken men, and youth is pleasant. On the other hand, people of excitable nature always need relief, for even their body is ever in torment, owing to its special composition, and they are always under the influence of violent desire. But pain is driven out, both by the contrary pleasure and by any chance pleasure, if it be strong. And for these reasons they become self-indulgent and bad. But the pleasures that do not involve pains do not admit of excess, and these are among the things pleasant by nature and not incidentally. By things pleasant incidentally I mean those that act as cures, for because, as a result, people are cured, through some action of the part that remains healthy. For this reason the process is thought pleasant. By things naturally pleasant, I mean those that stimulate the action of the healthy nature. There is no one thing that is always pleasant, because our nature is not simple, but there is another element in us as well, inasmuch as we are perishable creatures. So that if the one element does something, this is unnatural to the other nature. And when the two elements are evenly balanced, what is done seems neither painful nor pleasant. For if the nature of anything were simple, the same action would always be most pleasant to it. This is why God always enjoys a single and simple pleasure. For there is not only an activity of movement, but an activity of immobility. And pleasure is found more in rest than in movement. But change in all things is sweet, as the poet says, because of some vice. For as it is the vicious man that is changeable, so the nature that needs change is vicious. For it is not simple, nor good. We have now discussed continence and incontinence and pleasure and pain, both what each is and in what sense some of them are good and others bad. It remains to speak of friendship. Book 8. 1. After what we have said, a discussion of friendship would naturally follow, since it is a virtue or implies virtue and is besides most necessary with a view to living. For without friends, no one would choose to live, though he had all other goods. Even rich men and those in possession of office and of dominating power are thought to need friends most of all. For what is the use of such prosperity without the opportunity of beneficence, which is exercised chiefly, and in its most laudable form, towards friends? Or how can prosperity be guarded and preserved without friends? The greater it is, the more exposed is it to risk. And in poverty and in other misfortunes, men think friends are the only refuge. It helps the young, too, to keep from error. It aids older people by ministering to their needs and supplementing the activities that are failing from weakness. Those in the prime of life it stimulates to noble actions. Two going together, for with friends, men are more able both to think and to act. Again, parent seems by nature to feel it for offspring and offspring for parent, not only among men, but among birds and among most animals. It is felt mutually by members of the same race, and especially by men, whence we praise lovers of their fellow men. We may even in our travels see how near and dear every man is to every other. Friendship seems, too, to hold states together, and lawgivers to care more for it than for justice. For unanimity seems to be something like friendship, and this they aim at most of all, and expel faction as their worst enemy. And when men are friends, they have no need of justice. While they are just, they need friendship as well, and the truest form of justice is thought to be a friendly quality. But it is not only necessary but also noble, for we praise those who love their friends, and it is thought to be a fine thing to have many friends, and again we think it is the same people that are good men and are friends. Not a few things about friendship are matters of debate. Some define it as a kind of likeness and say, like people are friends, whence come the sayings, like to like. Birds of a feather flock together, and so on. Others, on the contrary, say, two of a trade never agree. On this very question they inquire for deeper and more physical causes, Euripides saying that parched earth loves the rain, and stately heaven, when filled with rain, loves to fall to earth. And Heraclitus, that it is what opposes that helps, and from different tones comes the fairest tune, and all things are produced through strife. While Empedocles, as well as others, expresses the opposite view, that like aims at like. The physical problems we may leave alone, for they do not belong to the present inquiry. Let us examine those which are human and involve character and feeling, e.g. whether friendship can arise between any two people, or people cannot be friends if they are wicked, and whether there is one species of friendship or more than one. Those who think there is only one because it admits of degrees have relied on an inadequate indication, for even things different in species admit of degree. We have discussed this matter previously. 2. The kinds of friendship may perhaps be cleared up if we first come to know the object of love. For not everything seems to be loved, but only the lovable, and this is good, pleasant, or useful. But it would seem to be that by which some good or pleasure is produced, that is useful, so that it is the good and the useful that are lovable as ends. Do men love, then, the good, or what is good for them? These sometimes clash. So too with regard to the pleasant, Now it is thought that each loves what is good for himself, and that the good is without qualification lovable, and what is good for each man is lovable for him. But each man loves not what is good for him, but what seems good. This, however, will make no difference. We shall just have to say that this is that which seems lovable. Now there are three grounds on which people love. Of the love of lifeless objects we do not use the word friendship, for it is not mutual love, nor is there a wishing of good to the other, for it would surely be ridiculous to wish wine well. If one wishes anything for it, it is that it may keep, so that one may have it oneself. But to a friend, we say we ought to wish what is good for his sake. But to those who thus wish good, we ascribe only goodwill if the wish is not reciprocated. Goodwill when it is reciprocal, being friendship. Or must we add, when it is recognized? For many people have goodwill to those whom they have not seen, but judge to be good or useful, and one of these might return this feeling. These people seem to bear goodwill to each other. But how could one call them friends when they do not know their mutual feelings? To be friends, then, they must be mutually recognized as bearing goodwill and wishing well to each other for one of the aforesaid reasons. 3. Now these reasons differ from each other in kind. So, therefore, do the corresponding forms of love and friendship. There are, therefore, three kinds of friendship, equal in number to the things that are lovable. For with respect to each, there is a mutual and recognized love. And those who love each other wish well to each other in that respect in which they love one another. Now, those who love each other for their utility do not love each other for themselves, but in virtue of some good which they get from each other. So, too, with those who love for the sake of pleasure. It is not for their character that men love ready-witted people, but because they find them pleasant. Therefore, those who love for the sake of utility love for the sake of what is good for themselves, and those who love for the sake of pleasure do so for the sake of what is pleasant to themselves, and not in so far as the other is the person loved, but in so far as he is useful or pleasant. And thus these friendships are only incidental. For it is not as being the man he is that the loved person is loved, but as providing some good or pleasure. Such friendships, then, are easily dissolved, if the parties do not remain like themselves, for if the one party is no longer pleasant or useful, the other ceases to love him. Now the useful is not permanent, but is always changing. Thus, when the motive of the friendship is done away, the friendship is dissolved, inasmuch as it existed only for the ends in question. This kind of friendship seems to exist chiefly between old people, for at that age people pursue not the pleasant but the useful, and of those who are in their prime or young, between those who pursue utility. And such people do not live much with each other either, for sometimes they do not even find each other pleasant. Therefore, they do not need such companionship unless they are useful to each other. For they are pleasant to each other only in so far as they rouse in each other hopes of something good to come. Among such friendships, people also class the friendship of a host and guest. On the other hand, the friendship of young people seems to aim at pleasure. For they live under the guidance of emotion, and pursue above all what is pleasant to themselves and what is immediately before them, but with increasing age their pleasures become different. This is why they quickly become friends, and quickly cease to be so. Their friendship changes with the object that is found pleasant, and such pleasure alters quickly. Young people are amorous too, for the greater part of the friendship of love depends on emotion and aims at pleasure. This is why they fall in love and quickly fall out of love, changing often within a single day. But these people do wish to spend their days and lives together, for it is thus that they attain the purpose of their friendship. Perfect friendship is the friendship of men who are good and alike in virtue, for these wish well alike to each other qua good, and they are good themselves. Now those who wish well to their friends for their sake are most truly friends, for they do this by reason of own nature and not incidentally. Therefore their friendship lasts as long as they are good, and goodness is an enduring thing, and each is good without qualification and to his friend, for the good are both good without qualification and useful to each other. So too they are pleasant, for the good are pleasant both without qualification and to each other, since to each his own activities and others like them are pleasurable, and the actions of the good are the same or like. And such a friendship is, as might be expected, permanent, since there meet in it all the qualities that friends should have. For all friendship is for the sake of good or of pleasure, good or pleasure either in the abstract or such as will be enjoyed by him who has the friendly feeling, and is based on a certain resemblance, and to a friendship of good men all the qualities we have named belong in virtue of the nature of the friends themselves. For in the case of this kind of friendship, the other qualities also are alike in both friends, and that which is good without qualification is also without qualification pleasant, and these are the most lovable qualities. Love and friendship, therefore, are found most and in their best form between such men. But it is natural that such friendships should be infrequent, for such men are rare. Further, such friendship requires time and familiarity, as the proverb says, "Men cannot know each other till they have eaten salt together," nor can they admit each other to friendship or be friends till each has been found lovable and been trusted by each. Those who quickly show the marks of friendship to each other wish to be friends, but are not friends unless they both are lovable and know the fact, for a wish for friendship may arise quickly, but friendship does not. 4. This kind of friendship, then, is perfect both in respect of duration and in all other respects. And in it each gets from each, in all respects, the same as or something like what he gives, which is what ought to happen between friends. Friendship for the sake of pleasure bears a resemblance to this kind, for good people too are pleasant to each other. So too does friendship for the sake of utility, for the good are also useful to each other. Among men of these inferior sorts too, friendships are most permanent when the friends get the same thing from each other, e.g. pleasure, and not only that, but also from the same source, as happens between ready-witted people, not as happens between lover and beloved. For these do not take pleasure in the same things, but the one in seeing the beloved, and the other in receiving attentions from his lover, and when the bloom of youth is passing, the friendship sometimes passes too. For the one finds no pleasure in the sight of the other, and the other gets no attentions from the first. But many lovers, on the other hand, are constant. If familiarity has led them to love each other's characters, these being alike. But those who exchange not pleasure, but utility in their amour, are both less truly friends and less constant. Those who are friends for the sake of utility part when the advantage is at an end, for they were lovers not of each other, but of profit. For the sake of pleasure or utility, then, even bad men may be friends of each other, or good men of bad. Or one who is neither good nor bad may be a friend to any sort of person, but for their own sake, clearly only good men can be friends, for bad men do not delight in each other unless some advantage come of the relation. The friendship of the good, too, and this alone is proof against slander. For it is not easy to trust any one talk about a man who has long been tested by oneself. And it is among good men that trust, and the feeling that he would never wrong me, and all the other things that are demanded in true friendship are found. In the other kinds of friendship, however, there is nothing to prevent these evils arising. For men apply the name of friends, even to those whose motive is utility, in which sense states are said to be friendly, for the alliances of states seem to aim at advantage, and to those who love each other for the sake of pleasure, in which sense children are called friends. Therefore we too ought perhaps to call such people friends, and say that there are several kinds of friendship. Firstly, and in the proper sense that of good men qua good, and by analogy, the other kinds. For it is in virtue of something good and something akin to what is found in true friendship that they are friends, since even the pleasant is good for the lovers of pleasure. But these two kinds of friendship are not often united, nor do the same people become friends for the sake of utility and of pleasure, for things that are only incidentally connected are not often coupled together. Friendship being divided into these kinds, bad men will be friends for the sake of pleasure or of utility, being in this respect like each other, but good men will be friends for their own sake, i.e., in virtue of their goodness. These, then, are friends without qualification. The others are friends incidentally, and through a resemblance to these. 5. As in regard to the virtues, some men are called good in respect of a state of character, others in respect of an activity, so too in the case of friendship. For those who live together delight in each other and confer benefits on each other, but those who are asleep or locally separated are not performing, but are disposed to perform, the activities of friendship. Distance does not break off the friendship absolutely, but only the activity of it. But if the absence is lasting, it seems actually to make men forget their friendship. Hence the saying, out of sight, out of mind. Neither old people nor sour people seem to make friends easily, for there is little that is pleasant in them, and no one can spend his days with one whose company is painful or not pleasant, since nature seems above all to avoid the painful and to aim at the pleasant. Those, however, who approve of each other, but do not live together, seem to be well-disposed, rather than actual friends. For there is nothing so characteristic of friends as living together, since while it is people who are in need that desire benefits, even those who are supremely happy desire to spend their days together, for solitude suits such people least of all. But people cannot live together if they are not pleasant and do not enjoy the same things, as friends who are companions seem to do. The truest friendship, then, is that of the good, as we have frequently said. For that which is without qualification good or pleasant seems to be lovable and desirable. And for each person, that which is good or pleasant to him, and the good man is lovable and desirable to the good man for both these reasons. Now it looks as if love were a feeling, friendship a state of character. For love may be felt just as much towards lifeless things, but mutual love involves choice, and choice springs from a state of character. And men wish well to those whom they love for their sake, not as a result of feeling, but as a result of a state of character. And in loving a friend, men love what is good for themselves. For the good man in becoming a friend becomes a good to his friend. Each, then, both loves what is good for himself and makes an equal return in goodwill and in pleasantness. For friendship is said to be equality, and both of these are found most in the friendship of the good. 6. Between sour and elderly people friendship arises less readily, inasmuch as they are less good-tempered and enjoy companionship less. For these are thought to be the greatest marks of friendship, productive of it. This is why, while men become friends quickly, old men do not. It is because men do not become friends with those in whom they do not delight, and similarly, sour people do not quickly make friends either. But such men may bear good will to each other, for they wish one another well and aid one another in need. But they are hardly friends because they do not spend their days together nor delight in each other, and these are thought the greatest marks of friendship. One cannot be a friend to many people in the sense of having friendship of the perfect type with them, just as one cannot be in love with many people at once. For love is a sort of excess of feeling, and it is the nature of such only to be felt towards one person. And it is not easy for many people at the same time to please the same person very greatly, or perhaps even to be good in his eyes. One must, too, acquire some experience of the other person and become familiar with him, and that is very hard. But with a view to utility or pleasure, it is possible that many people should please one. For many people are useful or pleasant, and these services take little time. Of these two kinds, that which is for the sake of pleasure is the more like friendship, when both parties get the same things from each other and delight in each other, or in the things, as in the friendships of the young, for generosity is more found in such friendships. Friendship based on utility is for the commercially minded. People who are supremely happy, too, have no need of useful friends, but do need pleasant friends. For they wish to live with someone, and though they can endure for a short time what is painful, no one could put up with it continuously, nor even with the good itself, if it were painful to him. This is why they look out for friends who are pleasant. Perhaps they should look out for friends who, being pleasant, are also good, and good for them too. For so they will have all the characteristics that friends should have. People in positions of authority seem to have friends who fall into distinct classes. Some people are useful to them, and others are pleasant. But the same people are rarely both, for they seek neither those whose pleasantness is accompanied by virtue, nor those whose utility is with a view to noble objects. But in their desire for pleasure, they seek for ready-witted people. And their other friends they choose as being clever at doing what they are told. And these characteristics are rarely combined. Now we have said that the good man is at the same time pleasant and useful. But such a man does not become the friend of one who surpasses him in station, unless he is surpassed also in virtue. If this is not so, he does not establish equality by being proportionally exceeded in both respects. But people who surpass him in both respects are not so easy to find. However that may be, the aforesaid friendships involve equality. For the friends get the same things from one another and wish the same things for one another, or exchange one thing for another, e.g. pleasure for utility. We have said, however, that they are both less truly friendships and less permanent. But it is from their likeness and their unlikeness to the same thing that they are thought both to be and not to be friendships. It is by their likeness to the friendship of virtue that they seem to be friendships, for one of them involves pleasure and the other utility, and these characteristics belong to the friendship of virtue as well. While it is because the friendship of virtue is proof against slander and permanent, while these quickly change, besides differing from the former in many other respects, that they appear not to be friendships, i.e., it is because of their unlikeness to the friendship of virtue. 7. But there is another kind of friendship, viz., that which involves an inequality between the parties, e.g., that of father to son, and in general of elder to younger, that of man to wife, and in general that of ruler to subject, And these friendships differ also from each other. For it is not the same that exists between parents and children, and between rulers and subjects. Nor is even that of father to son the same as that of son to father. Nor that of husband to wife the same as that of wife to husband. For the virtue and the function of each of these is different, and so are the reasons for which they love. The love and the friendship are therefore different also. Each party, then, neither gets the same from the other, nor ought to seek it. But when children render to parents what they ought to render to those who brought them into the world, and parents render what they should to their children, the friendship of such persons will be abiding and excellent. In all friendships, implying inequality, the love also should be proportional, i.e., the better should be loved more than he loves, and so should the more useful. And similarly, in each of the other cases. For when the love is in proportion to the merit of the parties, then in a sense arises equality, which is certainly held to be characteristic of friendship. But equality does not seem to take the same form in acts of justice and in friendship. For in acts of justice, what is equal in the primary sense is that which is in proportion to merit, while quantitative equality is secondary. But in friendship, quantitative equality is primary and proportion to merit secondary. This becomes clear if there is a great interval in respect of virtue or vice or wealth or anything else between the parties, for then they are no longer friends, and do not even expect to be so. And this is most manifest in the case of the gods, for they surpass us most decisively in all good things. But it is clear also in the case of kings, for with them too, men who are much their inferiors do not expect to be friends, nor do men of no account expect to be friends with the best or wisest men. In such cases, it is not possible to define exactly up to what point friends can remain friends, for much can be taken away and friendship remain, but when one party is removed to a great distance, as God is, the possibility of friendship ceases. This is in fact the origin of the question whether friends really wish for their friends the greatest goods, e.g. that of being gods, since in that case their friends will no longer be friends to them, and therefore will not be good things for them, for friends are good things. The answer is that if we were right in saying that friend wishes good to friend for his sake, his friend must remain the sort of being he is, whatever that may be. Therefore, it is for him only, so long as he remains a man, that he will wish the greatest goods. But perhaps not all the greatest goods. For it is for himself most of all that each man wishes what is good. 8. Most people seem, owing to ambition, to wish to be loved rather than to love, which is why most men love flattery, for the flatterer is a friend in an inferior position, or pretends to be such, and to love more than he is loved, and being loved seems to be akin to being honoured, and this is what most people aim at. But it seems to be not for its own sake that people choose honour, but incidentally. For most people enjoy being honoured by those in positions of authority because of their hopes, for they think that if they want anything they will get it from them, and therefore they delight in honour as a token of favour to come. While those who desire honour from good men, and men who know, are aiming at confirming their own opinion of themselves. They delight in honour, therefore, because they believe in their own goodness on the strength of the judgment of those who speak about them. In being loved, on the other hand, people delight for its own sake, whence it would seem to be better than being honoured, and friendship to be desirable in itself. But it seems to lie in loving rather than in being loved, as is indicated by the delight mothers take in loving. For some mothers hand over their children to be brought up, and so long as they know their fate, they love them and do not seek to be loved in return, if they cannot have both, but seem to be satisfied if they see them prospering. And they themselves love their children, even if these, owing to their ignorance, give them nothing of a mother's due. Now since friendship depends more on loving, and it is those who love their friends that are praised, loving seems to be the characteristic virtue of friends. So that it is only those in whom this is found in due measure that are lasting friends, and only their friendship that endures. It is in this way, more than any other, that even unequals can be friends. They can be equalized. Now equality and likeness are friendship, and especially the likeness of those who are like in virtue, for being steadfast in themselves they hold fast to each other, and neither ask nor give base services, but, one may say, even prevent them. For it is characteristic of good men neither to go wrong themselves nor to let their friends do so, but wicked men have no steadfastness, for they do not remain even like to themselves, but become friends for a short time because they delight in each other's wickedness. Friends who are useful or pleasant last longer, i.e., as long as they provide each other with enjoyments or advantages. Friendship for utility's sake seems to be that which most easily exists between contraries, e.g. between poor and rich, between ignorant and learned. For what a man actually lacks, he aims at, and one gives something else in return. But under this head, too, might bring lover and beloved, beautiful and ugly. This is why lovers sometimes seem ridiculous, when they demand to be loved as they love. If they are equally lovable, their claim can perhaps be justified, but when they have nothing lovable about them, it is ridiculous. Perhaps, however, contrary does not even aim at contrary by its own nature, but only incidentally, the desire being for what is intermediate, for that is what is good, e.g., it is good for the dry not to become wet, but to come to the intermediate state, and similarly with the hot, and in all other cases. These subjects we may dismiss, for they are indeed somewhat foreign to our inquiry. 9. Friendship and justice seem, as we have said at the outset of our discussion, to be concerned with the same objects and exhibited between the same persons. For in every community there is thought to be some form of justice and friendship too. At least men address as friends their fellow voyagers and fellow soldiers, and so too those associated with them in any other kind of community. And the extent of their association is the extent of their friendship, as it is the extent to which justice exists between them. And the proverb, "What friends have is common property," expresses the truth, for friendship depends on community. Now brothers and comrades have all things in common, but the others to whom we have referred have definite things in common, some more things, others fewer. For of friendships, too, some are more and others less truly friendships. And the claims of justice differ, too. The duties of parents to children, and those of brothers to each other, are not the same, nor those of comrades, and those of fellow citizens, and so, too, with the other kinds of friendship. There is a difference, therefore, also, between the acts that are unjust towards each of these classes of associates, and the injustice increases by being exhibited towards those who are friends in a fuller sense, e.g., it is a more terrible thing to defraud a comrade than a fellow citizen, more terrible not to help a brother than a stranger, and more terrible to wound a father than anyone else. And the demands of justice also seem to increase with the intensity of the friendship, which implies that friendship and justice exist between the same persons and have an equal extension. Now, all forms of community are like parts of the political community. For men journey together with a view to some particular advantage and to provide something that they need for the purposes of life. And it is for the sake of advantage that the political community too seems both to have come together originally and to endure, for this is what legislators aim at. And they call just that which is to the common advantage. Now the other communities aim at advantage bit by bit, e.g. sailors at what is advantageous on a voyage with a view to making money or something of the kind. Fellow soldiers at what is advantageous in war, whether it is wealth or victory or the taking of a city that they seek. And members of tribes and deems act similarly. Some communities seem to arise for the sake of pleasure, viz. Religious guilds and social clubs, for these exist respectively for the sake of offering sacrifice and of companionship. But all these seem to fall under the political community, for it aims not at present advantage, but at what is advantageous for life as a whole, offering sacrifices and arranging gatherings for the purpose and assigning honours to the gods, and providing pleasant relaxations for themselves. For the ancient sacrifices and gatherings seem to take place after the harvest as a sort of first fruits, because it was at these seasons that people had most leisure. All the communities, then, seem to be parts of the political community, and the particular kinds of friendship will correspond to the particular kinds of community. 10. There are three kinds of constitution, and an equal number of deviation, forms, perversions, as it were, of them. The constitutions are monarchy, aristocracy, and thirdly, that which is based on a property qualification, which it seems appropriate to call timocratic, though most people are wont to call it polity. The best of these is monarchy, the worst, timocracy. The deviation from monarchy is tyranny, for both are forms of one-man rule. But there is the greatest difference between them. The tyrant looks to his own advantage, the king to that of his subjects. For a man is not a king unless he is sufficient to himself and excels his subjects in all good things, and such a man needs nothing further, therefore he will not look to his own interests, but to those of his subjects. For a king who is not like that would be a mere titular king. Now tyranny is the very contrary to this. The tyrant pursues his own good. And it is clearer in the case of tyranny that it is the worst deviation form. But it is the contrary of the best that is worst. Monarchy passes over into tyranny. For tyranny is the evil form of one-man rule, and the bad king becomes a tyrant. Aristocracy passes over into oligarchy by the badness of the rulers, who distribute contrary to equity what belongs to the city, all or most of the good things to themselves, and office always to the same people, paying most regard to wealth. Thus the rulers are few and are bad men instead of the most worthy. Timocracy passes over into democracy, for these are coterminous, since it is the ideal even of timocracy to be the rule of the majority, and all who have the property qualification count as equal. Democracy is the least bad of the deviations, for in its case the form of constitution is but a slight deviation. These, then, are the changes to which constitutions are most subject. For these are the smallest and easiest transitions. One may find resemblances to the constitutions and, as it were, patterns of them even in households, for the association of a father with his sons bears the form of a monarchy, since the father cares for his children, and this is why Homer calls Zeus father. It is the ideal of monarchy to be paternal rule. But among the Persians, the rule of the father is tyrannical. They use their sons as slaves. Tyrannical, too, is the rule of a master over slaves, for it is the advantage of the master that is brought about in it. Now this seems to be a correct form of government, but the Persian type is perverted, for the modes of rule appropriate to different relations are diverse. The association of man and wife seems to be aristocratic, for the man rules in accordance with his worth, and in those matters in which a man should rule, but the matters that befit a woman he hands over to her. If the man rules in everything, the relation passes over into oligarchy, for in doing so he is not acting in accordance with their respective worth and not ruling in virtue of his superiority. Sometimes, however, women rule, because they are heiresses, so their rule is not in virtue of excellence, but due to wealth and power, as in oligarchies. The association of brothers is like timocracy, for they are equal, except in so far as they differ in age. Hence, if they differ much in age, the friendship is no longer of the fraternal type. Democracy is found chiefly in masterless dwellings, for here everyone is on an equality, and in those in which the ruler is weak, and everyone has license to do as he pleases. 11. Each of the constitutions may be seen to involve friendship, just in so far as it involves justice. The friendship between a king and his subjects depends on an excess of benefits conferred, for he confers benefits on his subjects if, being a good man, he cares for them with a view to their well-being, as a shepherd does for his sheep, whence Homer called Agamemnon shepherd of the peoples. Such, too, is the friendship of a father, though this exceeds the other in the greatness of the benefits conferred, for he is responsible for the existence of his children, which is thought the greatest good, and for their nurture and upbringing. These things are ascribed to ancestors as well. Further, by nature, a father tends to rule over his sons, ancestors over descendants, a king over his subjects. These friendships imply superiority of one party over the other, which is why ancestors are honored. The justice, therefore, that exists between persons so related is not the same on both sides, but is in every case proportioned to merit. For that is true of the friendship as well. The friendship of man and wife, again, is the same that is found in aristocracy. For it is in accordance with virtue the better gets more of what is good, and each gets what befits him, and so, too, with the justice in these relations. The friendship of brothers is like that of comrades, for they are equal and of like age, and such persons are, for the most part, like in their feelings and their character. Like this, too, is the friendship appropriate to timocratic government. For in such a constitution the ideal is for the citizens to be equal and fair. Therefore rule is taken in turn and on equal terms, and the friendship appropriate here will correspond. But in the deviation forms, as justice hardly exists, so too does friendship. It exists least in the worst form. In tyranny there is little or no friendship. For where there is nothing common to ruler and ruled, there is not friendship either, since there is not justice, e.g. between craftsman and tool, soul and body, master and slave. The latter in each case is benefited by that which uses it, but there is no friendship nor justice towards lifeless things. But neither is there friendship towards a horse or an ox, nor to a slave qua slave. For there is nothing common to the two parties. The slave is a living tool, and the tool a lifeless slave. Qua slave, then, one cannot be friends with him. But qua man, one can. For there seems to be some justice between any man and any other who can share in a system of law or be a party to an agreement. Therefore, there can also be friendship with him in so far as he is a man. Therefore, while in tyrannies friendship and justice hardly exist, in democracies they exist more fully, for where the citizens are equal, they have much in common. 12. Every form of friendship, then, involves association, as has been said. One might, however, mark off from the rest both the friendship of kindred and that of comrades, those of fellow citizens, fellow tribesmen, fellow voyagers, and the like, are more like mere friendships of association, for they seem to rest on a sort of compact. With them we might class the friendship of host and guest, the friendship of kinsman itself, while it seems to be of many kinds, appears to depend in every case on parental friendship. For parents love their children as being a part of themselves, and children their parents as being something originating from them. Now, first, parents know their offspring better than their children know that they are their children, and second, the originator feels his offspring to be his own more than the offspring do their begetter, for the product belongs to the producer, e.g. a tooth, or hair, or anything else to him whose it is. But the producer does not belong to the product, or belongs in a less degree, and third, the length of time produces the same result. Parents love their children as soon as these are born, but children love their parents only after time has elapsed, and they have acquired understanding or the power of discrimination by the senses. From these considerations it is also plain why mothers love more than fathers do. Parents, then, love their children as themselves, for their issue are by virtue of their separate existence a sort of other selves, while children love their parents as being born of them, and brothers love each other as being born of the same parents, for their identity with them makes them identical with each other, which is the reason why people talk of the same blood, the same stock, and so on. They are, therefore, in a sense the same thing, though in separate individuals. Two things that contribute greatly to friendship are a common upbringing and similarity of age, for two of an age take to each other, and people brought up together tend to be comrades, whence the friendship of brothers is akin to that of comrades, and cousins and other kinsmen are bound up together by derivation from brothers, viz., by being derived from the same parents. They come to be closer together, or farther apart, by virtue of the nearness or distance of the original ancestor. The friendship of children to parents and of men to gods is a relation to them as to something good and superior, for they have conferred the greatest benefits, since they are the causes of their being and of their nourishment, and of their education from their birth. And this kind of friendship possesses pleasantness and utility also, more than that of strangers, inasmuch as their life is lived more in common. The friendship of brothers has the characteristics found in that of comrades, and especially when these are good, and in general between people who are like each other, inasmuch as they belong more to each other and start with a love for each other from their very birth, and inasmuch as those born of the same parents and brought up together and similarly educated are more akin in character. And the test of time has been applied most fully and convincingly in their case. Between other kinsmen, friendly relations are found in due proportion. Between man and wife, friendship seems to exist by nature. For man is naturally inclined to form couples, even more than to form cities, inasmuch as the household is earlier and more necessary than the city, and reproduction is more common to man with the animals. With the other animals, the union extends only to this point. But human beings live together not only for the sake of reproduction, but also for the various purposes of life. For from the start the functions are divided, and those of man and woman are different. So they help each other by throwing their peculiar gifts into the common stock. It is for these reasons that both utility and pleasure seem to be found in this kind of friendship. But this friendship may be based also on virtue, if the parties are good, for each has its own virtue, and they will delight in the fact. And children seem to be a bond of union, which is the reason why childless people part more easily. For children are a good common to both, and what is common holds them together. How man and wife, and in general friend and friend, ought mutually to behave, seems to be the same question as how it is just for them to behave. For a man does not seem to have the same duties to a friend, a stranger, a comrade, and a schoolfellow. 13. There are three kinds of friendship, as we said at the outset of our inquiry, and in respect of each, some are friends on an equality, and others by virtue of a superiority. For not only can equally good men become friends, but a better man can make friends with a worse, and similarly in friendships of pleasure or utility, the friends may be equal or unequal in the benefits they confer. This being so, equals must effect the required equalization on a basis of equality in love and in all other respects, while unequals must render what is in proportion to their superiority or inferiority. Complaints and reproaches arise either only or chiefly in the friendship of utility, and this is only to be expected. For those who are friends on the ground of virtue are anxious to do well by each other, since that is a mark of virtue and of friendship. And between men who are emulating each other in this, there cannot be complaints or quarrels. No one is offended by a man who loves him and does well by him. If he is a person of nice feeling, he takes his revenge by doing well by the other. And the man who excels the other in the services he renders will not complain of his friend, since he gets what he aims at, for each man desires what is good. Nor do complaints arise much even in friendships of pleasure, for both get at the same time what they desire, if they enjoy spending their time together. And even a man who complained of another for not affording him pleasure would seem ridiculous, since it is in his power not to spend his days with him. But the friendship of utility is full of complaints. For as they use each other for their own interests, they always want to get the better of the bargain, and think they have got less than they should, and blame their partners because they do not get all they want and deserve. And those who do well by others cannot help them as much as those whom they benefit want. Now it seems that, as justice is of two kinds, one unwritten and the other legal, one kind of friendship of utility is moral and the other legal. And so complaints arise most of all when men do not dissolve the relation in the spirit of the same type of friendship in which they contracted it. The legal type is that which is on fixed terms. Its purely commercial variety is on the basis of immediate payment, while the more liberal variety allows time but stipulates for a definite quid pro quo. In this variety, the debt is clear and not ambiguous, but in the postponement, it contains an element of friendliness. And so some states do not allow suits arising out of such agreements, but think men who have bargained on the basis of credit ought to accept the consequences. The moral type is not on fixed terms. It makes a gift, or does whatever it does, as to a friend, but one expects to receive as much or more as having not given but lent. And if a man is worse off when the relation is dissolved than he was when it was contracted, he will complain. This happens because all or most men, while they wish for what is noble, choose what is advantageous. Now it is noble to do well by another without a view to repayment, but it is the receiving of benefits that is advantageous. Therefore, if we can, we should return the equivalent of what we have received. For we must not make a man our friend against his will, we must recognize that we were mistaken at the first and took a benefit from a person we should not have taken it from, since it was not from a friend, nor from one who did it just for the sake of acting so, and we must settle up just as if we had been benefited on fixed terms. Indeed, one would agree to repay, if one could. If one could not, even the giver would not have expected one to do so. Therefore, if it is possible, we must repay, but at the outset we must consider the man by whom we are being